as for Kunstradio, the artists are the most important aspect, or aspects one cannot say, but the artists are the experts. That's what we believe in. And without the artists and their engagement and their encouragement and their also curiosity, and there wouldn't be any Kunstradio at all.
Yeah.
So it's always the artists bringing the ideas. And of course, you're sometimes discussing ideas and so on. And but it was that was always the artists who also started with bringing Heidi cassettes for her journalist Heidi Grundmann journalistic program. And they brought her cassettes with audio works. And then she, because the artist brought the cassettes, she invented a series called Art to Listen to. Kunst zum Hören, and out of that Kunstradio developed, and the Kunstradio homepage, kunstradio.at, is still also only there because artists came in 95 and said, hey, you need a homepage. I said, mm-hmm. And so that's how it's developing, and I guess it's similar also, or was similar with Soundproof, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we at Soundproof was interesting because the ABC, you know, had a long legacy of late night radio listening, of radio art, and there was just a brief moment in time, about 5 to 10 years, where it disappeared. And so Soundproof was really picking up on that same legacy that had existed, you know, from the '70s and the '80s onwards. And so that really it is a continuation of that history. And absolutely, I mean, the reason we were able to kind of hit the ground running so quickly and produce, you know, that many shows that quickly was because there was a community here ready that hadn't been serviced up until that time. There'd sort of been a generation that had been skipped. And so they didn't even realize that, you know, there was a younger generation coming through that didn't even realize that radio art was an option and that there would be a space for them to make this specific kind of form. So Soundproof was absolutely just a response to wanting to provide a space for the local community to try something new, which really wasn't afforded to them, you know, through community radio in Australia or through pirate radio or free radio. There aren't really other avenues to be a radio artist in Australia apart from the public institutions, which I think is quite different from the situation in Europe.
Mm. And do you see it in the history of the listening room a little bit, Soundproof?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Same contributors, same generation, same sort of explorations, same kind of... I think Soundproof shifted a little bit because we were so focused on making sure we could access international audiences. So we really focused on our online a bit as well, which is why... Helen, you say there's still this archive there. We're very determined to keep that up because, you know, even though the show's gone, I think it's really important to have this stuff available. And I think that's a slightly different, it's a very slight shift in framework than, for instance, you know, a kind of purist radio artist. So that's where I think Soundproof maybe just went in a little bit different direction than some of the other public institutions and their relationship to radio art.
This seems very interesting to me, Miyuki, what you said, that it's some kind of like the pure radio artist, which is not so much overlapping to a feature or documentary or to a topic which is really presented in a more or less journalistic or literary feature way. That's what I also was wondering, if you can tap and see where these people come from that contribute artistic works for radio. I mean, do they come from very experimental music sources, or do they even come from the journalistic way of radio making and wanting to go a bit further? What is the ambitions of the radio artists? Where do they come from?
There is, I mean, the beautiful thing about Soundproof is that, you know, we were able to work with the international community as well. And you know, the kind of the veteran radio artists who self-identify as radio artists, their practice is so, so polished and so gorgeous that really we were benchmarking against the sort of, you know, the European, the Canadian, you know, the American. And there was a generation of old makers that really had kind of faded away a bit because the programs, you know, the Listing Room, for instance, and a few of smaller other programs had ended. And so they didn't have the opportunity to keep up that practice. So the new generation that came through had no knowledge of this language, had no knowledge of this idea of being a radio artist. So it was absolutely that. It was people pulling in from the fringes of experimental music or sound poetry or, even kind of expanded journalism, so sort of impressionistic journalism, and really kind of asking them to push themselves into territory that they'd never worked in before. So, it was a fantastic experiment for me too to try and figure out how to do that because we were all kind of moving into this unknown together. But I would say there were really only, off the top of my head, sort of two or three people in Australia that say they are a radio artist. And Elizabeth, you know them, sort of John Rose and, you know, these big names. So it was very much, it was very much this kind of transformation of artists happening in Australia.
Elizabeth, do you see any schools developing within the Kunstradio context that come to offer programs for Kunstradio? I mean, we are talking about more than 20 years of history of Kunstradio also.
30 years. It's
30.
30.
30.
Yes.
Okay. It's even more. So it's so hard probably to talk about that. But do you have any thoughts on it?
Yes. Well, the origin was, of course, that that program I mentioned before, Kunst zum Hören, where Heidi was reporting mainly on visual arts, and many visual artists worked with sound at that time in the late 70s and gave her that works on cassette. And then also because there was a strong connection between Austria and Vancouver, for different reasons, of Vienna and Vancouver, they're also a kind of Kunstradio, also or the radio artists, which came to Kunstradio in the beginning, were also very often Canadian artists. And I think the first artist whom Heidi met ever who called himself radio artist was the Canadian artist Hank Bull. And he said, "I'm a radio artist." And he was the first one Heidi met who really called himself a radio artist. And this is also because in Canada, there's that long tradition of non-profit community radios and also university radios. And so there was also space on the air for artists to do radio. And so with Kunstradio, it's really more people really coming from the arts. And there's not many who are only doing radio art, but of course they are also working in different kinds of fields in art because only radio art is very hard, I think, to survive. But so there's a long history, and also in Austria in the meanwhile, of course, as Kunstradio is also there for 30 years, many artists, Austrian artists, worked the first time with radio in Kunstradio, because at that time there was only the ORF, because the ORF was a monopole, or there was only the ORF until 1998, which is very long, and we didn't have any non-profit radios or even commercial radios until 1998. So the ORF was a monopoly, and there was of course some pirate radios, but also some artists were involved, and Kunstradio had connections. So I would say it's a very long history in all kinds of fields of art, from literature, music, visual arts, telecommunication art, media art, and sometimes somebody comes from film. But with Kunstradio, it's not so much people or artists or somebody coming from journalistic background.
Mm-hmm. I would be very interested also coming from this to think about how your both programs, Soundproof and Kunstradio, somehow define what is radio art. Because both, you have a big archive. I mean, you can enter there and you can swim in it because it's so broad and you always can hear something. And it's like a library or like an, well, it's archives that collect radio artworks. Mm. I mean, is this something you have in mind also that you are actually, you are the address to go to if you want to think about what is radio art today?
Hmm. Well, it's more that we also started in also long time ago, in 2002, I think, or one, I don't know exactly now. We started a series called Curated By, and we asked international artists, so not from Austria, to think about what is radio art today, and to develop a series of about 5 Kunstradio programs with artists from their own country or from wherever for a certain topic, because we wanted also to broaden our view to see what else or how is radio art defined outside our mind framework or outside the circle you're moving anyway yourself, you know? So yes and no. Our one is also searching for other thoughts about radio art to give a broader access to the audience, because as being national public radio, or part of the national public radio, I think it's very important to give a certain broad variety or to offer it to the audience or the listeners or users. And of course, it always has also a certain kind of handwriting, if you want to say it like this. I don't know the English expression for. Of course, in the end, also if you try to not curate things and give the curation to artists and so on, of course you choose the artist and ask her or him to please develop a series. Yeah? So as much as one is trying to get it, you know, also how to open the view, yeah, or the listen, whatever, the ear, it still is connected to a certain person in the end.
Yeah.
And of course you're defining some things with what you're choosing to broadcast in the end.
It's a decision actually you make also, yeah, what goes on air and what not. I don't know if the things you get offered, maybe it's so many things that you really can decide. I don't know what is your policy or what was it to pick the pieces for Soundproof, Miyuki?
Initially it was pure panic. We were such a small team and we were working so hard, you know, it was really just to make sure that something went out every week that we were happy with.
It's very hard work to push something out every week, I think.
Yeah,
and if you start off in the beginning, you even cannot rebroadcast something
catalog,
in emergency
no
cases.
No,
yeah?
I know.
And something
so initially
has to go out, no?
Panic. Absolutely.
Something has to go out every week. It doesn't matter. It has to be, which is great.
No, it's relentless, but it is. But it does. I mean, I love that ritual, that weekly ritual. I think there's something, you know, if you talk about radio art and the broadcast, I think that's there's something in that ritual that makes it forms the work. And so, yeah, I mean, initially it was very much just trying to make sure that we were putting stuff out there. What was really the questions that we would often ask ourselves is because, you know, I keep coming back to this idea that before Soundproof there was this gap in listening and so in literacy and in language of both artists but actually the listeners. And so we were very cautious, not cautious, but we were very careful to offer works that were accessible to people, that were kind of gently inviting, that sort of tried to, you know, that tried to sort of bring them in rather than push them away. And so that was partly around the presentation, but it was also around the choice of the works themselves. And in that sense, I think Soundproof, and, you know, you can tell me whether it succeeded or not, but it tried to, find a balance between sort of music and word, in that there wouldn't be, you wouldn't find really a 52-minute program of purely sound in terms of soundscape or sound or field recording, but there would often be kind of textual works in there as well. And I think that was very much trying to move from this big kind of broadcaster that was so word heavy and trying to move out of that into a different space, but doing it smoothly rather than jarringly for the listener in their, you know, in their car or in their home or wherever they were.
You are actually also coming from different backgrounds and have very different histories also, how you got involved to take care and to grow radio art in your stations. Can you talk a little bit about your personal involvement also and your, let's say, the heart you give in for this exotic way to do radio? I mean, what is your passion about it, and how did you get involved to be like the curators for Soundproof and for Kunstradio?
Do you want to start, Miyuki?
Sure. I was just in the right place at the right time. I won't get into the boring background politics of working in a national institution, because there's so much of it and it's so uninteresting. But basically, we started a little unit, and they wanted something that sounded more fiction works, more drama works, and more sound works. And I gravitated immediately to the sound work, because ultimately, you talked about Elizabeth, the community radio stations in Canada. Mm-hmm. I went to school and I studied in the States, and so I had a kind of expansive music show on my university station, and would often just mess around with my voice, mess around with the music, mess around with different sources in a really sort of late night community radio station kind of way, and that was really where that kind of connection to this sort of material came. But I never really, you know, because I'm such a salary man, you know, like a full-time worker, I hadn't found my home for that sort of exploration until I came to Soundproof. So I went through very traditional journalism channels, but in the meantime was playing in my own practice with more experimental things.
Well, I can say I was at the right... I was just there and it happened to me, more or less. Because I was still in school. And,
wow, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
And I was in school and I had a summer job at the bakery, and my colleague in the from the school class and a very good friend of mine, he said, why don't you go to my mother, which is Heidi Grundmann, the founder of Kunstradio, that was in 1991, and said, she needs somebody to bring a certain order to her audio cassettes, and you're not happy in the bakery anyway, so yeah, that's why I somehow ended up in Kunstradio. It was because Heidi Grundmann was looking for somebody bringing a order to her 900 audio cassettes, and there were also at the time some CDs and some DAT cassettes, but not many. And yeah, that's what I did. And that's still in order. The rest is chaos. And so I stayed there for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and I brought a certain order to the cassettes, and I started listening to some of the audio cassettes, because of course there was not written on them exactly what it was or whatever, and some of them of course were probably the proper titles and everything on it, others no. And also I remember I listened, I liked very much the records by John Rose, which was a very great influence on me from the beginning, and I really loved his stuff because I thought it's funny, although I didn't understand all the English, I guess. And then I went back to school and finished A-level. And then after A-level, as ordering cassettes worked so well, Heidi asked me if I can do an address archive on FileMaker. And then so I went back doing working for that and trying to study it next to it, like comparing literature and Spanish, which I never succeeded, Spanish at least. And then I tried to study publicistic, so journalism and theater, but I don't know, in Kunsthalle there was always projects going on, and somehow I ended up in Tirol in 93 for a symposium and a big project called On the Air. And there I also met Gregory Whitehead, Concha Jerez Rosiguez, and all that people. And I helped originally I was asked to help the main organizer to organize this thing. And I thought, okay, why not? I do it. And so I didn't go to the biochemistry school. I could have gone out of 300 people that took 30, but I never showed up, and somehow I ended up in Tirol and later on in Kunstradio. And then in 98, Heidi had to retire, and here I am.
Did you know that you were did you see yourself becoming a curator?
No. I always wanted to become, as I was a little child, I thought of becoming a manager. And to a certain degree, I also then later did, as parallel to Kunstradio, I did on the weekends, I did my master in cultural and media management. Yeah, yeah. And but that was from 96 to 99 or something like that, where we also had our big network projects like Horizontal Radio, Rivers and Bridges, and Sound Drifting and all that. And that I did on the weekends. Yeah, so in the end, I don't know, I wanted also to do, but it really happened to me, and I'm still very happy about it.
I think so, yeah.
There's so many different artists coming with different ideas. The content is always different. And of course, since the 90s, the radio changed a lot with digitalization and all that. And it's still, especially National Public Radio, is still undergoing big changes, and they also hurt. And that won't stop, but that's like it is. And but still, inside that framework, although it's changing and not always to the best, there are still many things possible. And still space for artists and radio art to work within the medium and reflect about it. So, and that's fantastic.
Maybe also it's this layer that you are saying, yeah, that you also think about what actually can radio do and how do people listen to the radio and what surrounds us on stations. If you just use the frequency band and you switch one from one station to another and you feel like everything just sounds the same clean way and you are not surprised at all, and then you come swap into such a program which is like more or less always offers something new and some kind of other perspectives, this is probably one of the exciting points to work with artists on radio, right? And both of you, I think, are very passionate radio makers. It's just what Miyuki says. Soundproof isn't there anymore, but you are still thinking, like, probably every day, how can you bring up another suggestion and probably enrich also the radio you are doing in Australia, right? I mean, what is for you, like, this burning flame, or however you want to call it? I mean, the thing that really gives you enthusiasm about working with artists on radio?
For me, it's that really interesting push and pull between a very intimate experience of listening to the radio and the generosity of it being free. And I know it's not free in many ways, and I know it's not actually free, but it feels free when you turn on the radio. Of course, you have to have the means to have a radio and, you know, these kinds of things. But it's an incredible generous act, I think, for artists to put their work out on the radio. And you know, there's a certain language and a beauty in the sort of radio artistry that that I know that I think is perfect for the medium. And it's that idea, exactly that idea of flicking through channels. And I don't know if there's an Australian term, but they use it a lot when they're talking about good radio in my work, like when the managers have come and they say it's a driveway moment. But that might not actually work in Europe because you guys aren't car obsessed like we are. So the driveway moment is if you're driving in your car and flick something on the radio and you have to stay in your car in your driveway to hear the end of it. And so they're saying that's a driveway moment. That's a driveway moment is a way of sort of saying you're so arrested, you're so sort of captured by this thing you've just come across that you know you can't, you're not going to leave. And so to me, that if I can do that for a listener, if any of the artists can do that for a listener, that to me is, and that's it. That's what it's about. And so I think that idea of, I don't know, there's a real kind of generosity of spirit in the art form that I really love. And that's absolutely why I keep doing it. Now, interestingly, I don't think the ABC, sadly, I'm not sure I should say this forever, but I don't think something like Soundproof will come back to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. I think it's going through a crazy change, like a lot of the broadcasters, and I just see everything becoming monetized, and that sort of stuff doesn't look good on the bank books, you know. So I'm not more interested. I would absolutely do, you know, I'd put my hand up in a heartbeat, but I'm now interested in hybrid ways of trying to find homes for radio art that unfortunately don't exist on the public broadcaster anymore, because I don't see a future on it, even though I wish it was.
I can understand your concerns or thoughts that it's not coming back on the national public radio. as one can see also in Europe, I mean, radio art programs disappearing, but sometimes they're also coming back because they're cheaper than others, which is a little bit weird to say, but it is like this sometimes, because it's like, that's also the case, I think, was the case of Soundproof. It's not so expensive to do like a classical radio drama, but on the other hand, also the radio drama departments move in other directions and really try different ways of doing radio drama and Hörspiele. But what I really think, and Miyuki partly said it also, is like the wonderful thing about radio and also the connection of radio and art and artists doing radio is that radio always is, first of all, it's a very mobile medium. So you can, it's very easy to access. Like that also fits to the driveway moment, which driveway. I really like. But it's a good expression, I think. And so you can take your radio everywhere. It's a cheap medium in brackets, because it's very easy to access. You do not need very expensive receivers. It's not expensive to do it if you think it in a very basic way. And actually, you only need a microphone and a radio transmitter, more or less. I mean, you can do it in a different way, of course, too, but it's quite easy to do, and it's also easy to access. And also what I really love is that moment of surprise. And that's the thing, I think, which is also the big difference to the internet, where I can choose everything and so on, which I can do, of course, also on the radio, if I know the schedule of the radio station I'm listening to. But I think the wonderful thing on radio is also that there is a moment of surprise where you switch on and you're just there. And if you don't like it, you move on and you maybe find something else which you like and which surprises you. And sometimes you always have that moment that, oh, okay, I come late because I have to listen to that till the end. Or you are really sorry that you missed the beginning. And I think this is also a great thing why it's also one of the great media. It's a great medium for surprise and also communication. And it can be everywhere. That's the great thing also. And you do not need are all that, okay, in the moment we all have internet everywhere anyway in the moment, but that was not always like that. So, and I think really that moment of surprise is really great, and that in the radio you still can find that moments where you are surprised. For example, when artists do their shows or their radio art pieces, and they also maybe think differently about the medium.
Mm.
And I think that's the great thing on the radio, is that there is that moment.
Mm. I think you both mentioned a little bit also these spaces on the radio, that they also, of course, can be broadened and to find other places where radio art can play a role. I think in Radio Revolten we also were thinking, how can we bring it on stage? How can we present installations which are also radio artistic works? We were looking for new presentational ways.
Sorry to interrupt. There's one thing I want to add. Mm-hmm. That the good thing on radio is also that if you switch it on and there's radio art, it doesn't say from the beginning, this is art. Like in the museum, where it is that very definitely house for art. But people sometimes stumble upon art, not knowing it is art, and just get interested. And I think this is also very important. Sorry.
Yeah.
And that's also the point with Radio Revolten, no?
Mm. Actually, that's the point, Elisabeth, yeah, because if you have an installation or an exhibition, then you know, okay, this is an artistic way to deal with the medium. That's very true. I mean, I turn on the radio, I'm actually not interested if this is art or not. I just want that it captures me somehow, yeah? This is very right. It's a completely other setting to create an artwork for an exhibition or installation or for a stage, for a festival, or if it was for a radio program. But anyways, it's what actually you both said. You also can do this to look for other ways where radio art can find new spaces. Do you have things in your mind? I mean, do you have a feeling, okay, I clearly see there is something missing, or I see the borders of all we're just trying, and I would like to push over these borders or to imagine, let's say, that in the future there are possibilities for radio art in such and such a kind of way.
What I think is really interesting is that radio art, however you really define it, it went out of the institution of radio from the beginning, I think, and really tried to push boundaries. And for a time we had also that expression expanded radio art, and on air, online, on site, so to connect different spaces with the radio or the medium of radio or the radio space, as we call it. And I think that the artists always try to push boundaries and find other ways. And also I see that the possibilities inside the national public radios get smaller and smaller for the artists anyway. They went outside that big institutions for a long time, or maybe from the beginning. Maybe they even entered from outside to the institution to go outside again and push it to the boundaries. So I think the good thing is that it can be everywhere, and also the artists take the possibilities to do their art, also radio art, and they either create their own radio stations, they build transmitters, or they try to make festivals at Radio Revolten possible, or they persuade somebody at a radio station that they can do something. So I think it's always like a process, and it won't stop, because it doesn't need big institutions, and it has all that possibilities. So I think artists will find always a way to do radio art and radio.
Yeah, and I think that what I think is really interesting is that when I start to see people with the values, the kind of ethics of the form of radio art, and that being applied in different ways as well. It's very similar to what you said, that Elizabeth is kind of like hybrid nature, and that if you're a hybrid maker, if you're a person that exists in hybrids or in boundary spaces or in crossing spaces, then you're going to find ways to shapeshift. You're going to find ways to take your practice and move it into spaces that didn't exist previously or you didn't think existed previously. But I love this idea, and I see a little bit of it here where some of the old soundproofers, the Australian ones who now, you know, they can't make for the national broadcaster, they've taken the few, you know, the little learnings that in their first couple of pieces that they've made, and they've applied it in different ways into installations, into galleries. They, you know, interestingly enough, they make stuff for online, and then it is brought back into the national broadcaster. You know, so in some ways they're finding ways to push their practice, but it is still this values-driven thing that they clearly see themselves or hear themselves as radio artists. And again, that definition is a bit grey, but that, you know, that is how they self-identify, and that they can take that specific practice and if radio in its kind of you know, purest form, in it, you know, sort of a transmission, isn't part of necessarily the experience of it, the work can still be considered radio art. That's a really odd. It's an odd place that I, you know, that I don't know how you both feel about that, but I do see that. Like I hear these works being played in different spaces, and I'm like, well, that to me could easily go on the radio. And it's interesting that I'm finding it in galleries, in temporary spaces, in people's homes. On, you know, like on the community radio stations here, in pirate transmissions, and unfortunately just not reflected back in the national voice, you know.
For me, it is very clear that there are networks already functioning and that there are people who are working together, and that these boundaries are strengthened actually through corporations or through festivals or through the programs you are doing. So which networks do you recognize exist? Which networks are you working with actually? And whom are, from your point of view, are the confederates to make it possible also and to think maybe about other where to place radio artistic works in the future, and to think about strategies and maybe a kind of lobby. What do you see? What is there? With whom are you working?
Well, I'm of course working with the Ars Acoustica group of the European Broadcasting Union, which is clear because we are also having an internal exchange of pieces, and the Ars Acoustica group also joined the arts birthday parties. And of course, we are also working with Arts Birthday Net, where there's, of course, artists and radio stations from all over the world, but not inside the European Broadcasting Union. And with Radia, with the radio group, where also the meeting has taken place in Halle during Radio Revolten, which is very important because they have the exchange in the non-profit radio stations. And also there is all kinds of email exchanges and Facebook groups, which are always interesting to watch. And there's a bigger community than we think in the South Americas, Latin and South America.
Yeah. There was a very brief moment, I think it was when Nova, the Irish radio art channel program, was cancelled, and then also the Catalunya, Elizabeth, you'll know this, the Spanish radio art program as well.
Catalunya Radio, yeah.
Catalunya, yeah. There was a wonderful comment, and I don't know, you again, Elizabeth, you can tell me who, but within that Ars Acoustica forum, someone said we should come up with a hybrid network that looks at, so it takes, you know, takes the EBU or takes Ars Acoustica, takes Radia, takes Independence, takes the not-for-profits, takes your college and community radio stations, your pirate radio stations, and forms a network of, you know, ultimately interested people that can exchange ideas. And there isn't this kind of hierarchy There might be a hierarchy in that potentially the national broadcasters can pay a fee or something, you know, like they have more resources. But I thought that was a really interesting model going forward, because I think that implies stability to me, because you need to diversify all of the nodes of the network, because then ultimately it means that you have people communicating with each other that might be sequestered, might be off in a corner by themselves. But that's a big undertaking. I don't know where that comes from or who drives it, but I would love to see that form slowly as a way to form a stability in this thing. You know, I mean, I know Radio Revolt and Helen, it sounded like it was a lot of work, and it certainly was just probably one of the most extraordinary experiences of my entire life. I will say that. But, you know, something like you think about, because I now sit in this sort of public radio, quite straight documentary radio world as my day job, and then my nighttime hobby is, you know, this sort of stuff. But I wonder, there are a few conferences that cater to these sort of, you know, this kind of radio, public radio feature making. And I wonder if... you know, if there was and maybe it's not Radio Revolta, but something that brought a whole bunch of people together with that intention, really, that might be a good way to start. And I know that's a messy process, but at least it puts everybody in the same room and you can kind of have those conversations much more fluidly.